Good morning. You are tuned into Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll hear about a local nonprofit that's working to support seniors in the area, particularly those in residential facilities and those who are isolated at home. People have been quarantined in those residential facilities for weeks now, not being able to see their loved ones or family. We'll hear how they're being supported through this time. After that, we'll hear from a local expert in the kind of modelling that's now being done around the COVID-19 pandemic on what goes into creating the kind of projections and data that we're hearing about every day. John Lendorf joins us live from his kitchen for today's Radio Nibbles. Then after headlines from the BBC, we'll hear about the increase in hate crimes and abuse against Asian Americans in Colorado in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. At 9 o'clock, because of the census count that has officially begun, yesterday was the official count day, but you do have several weeks to have your family counted, but we'll rebroadcast our recent trends report on what's at stake for the community. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The Colorado Supreme Court yesterday ruled that the state legislature can resume the current session after the break for the novel coronavirus. The court was weighing in on whether the 120-day legislative session must conclude on May 6th, as was originally scheduled, or whether lawmakers could resume work for the remaining 50 days after the current break and have the session end later. The session was suspended on March 14th after Governor Jared Polis declared a state of emergency because of the coronavirus pandemic. The state's constitution was amended in the 1980s to limit the session to 120 days. The General Assembly then adopted a rule to say those days must run consecutively. In yesterday's 4-3 decision, the state Supreme Court ruled that an exception to that rule can be made when a public health emergency is declared that disrupts the session. 80 people have died in the state as a result of COVID-19. Those are the latest figures from the state health department. They also say that 3,342 people have tested positive for the virus. Yesterday, Governor Jared Polis said that the state is working hard to get protective equipment for medical staff. Speaking at a press conference on Wednesday, Governor Polis said that the state is getting masks, gloves, gowns and other personal protective equipment directly from China. Polis also extended the closure of schools across the state until April 30th, though he added that it is looking increasingly unlikely that schools will resume classes at all for this particular school year. The current statewide stay-at-home order is in effect until April 11th. On Tuesday, Denver Mayor Michael Hancock said that he will extend the city's stay-at-home order through April 30th. Some businesses in the state have received citations for remaining open in defiance of the order. The Denver Post reports that Hobby Lobby stores in Denver shut down this week after being cited by city inspectors for violating the order. And on Wednesday, the state's Attorney General's office directed the founder and chief executive officer of Hobby Lobby to close all of its stores around the entire state. The Post also reports that the appliance factory, Mattress Kingdom store, remains open despite repeated citations. Citations can result in a $999 fine or in jail time. COVID-19 is present in 4 Boulder County senior living facilities. The Daily Camera reports that 3 residents of The Bridge at Longmont have tested positive. All are hospitalised and one is in intensive care. 2 residents of the Fraser Senior Residential Facility in Boulder have tested positive, but reportedly have recovered and are doing well. And 1 resident of Balfour Cherry Wood Village in Louisville has also tested positive, while 3 people who live or work at Boulder Manor have also tested positive. A change in temperatures today. Temperatures will drop through the day with some freezing drizzle clearing up later this morning, but then a chance of some snow showers coming in, mainly after about 10 o'clock, but increasing after noon. Temperatures, as I said, will be falling through the day. Snow showers likely overnight, highs tomorrow in the mid-40s. It is 9 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Technicians will be performing some necessary work on our FM transmitter tower this week, and for their safety we are required periodically to briefly reduce our transmission power on the FM signal. So these interruptions will be for short periods, but we do apologise to our listeners for the inconvenience. But don't forget, you can catch all of our programming all the time streaming at kgnu.org, and our morning magazine is available as a podcast every day. You can catch it anytime or another time, whenever, wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for KGNU. The cancellation of religious services has hit many people in the community hard, in particular seniors who have been quarantined for several weeks in residential facilities. Local non-profits are working hard to continue to create a sense of community for many of those seniors, as well as meeting some of their other needs, like food security. In particular, one local group is working to make sure that local seniors can celebrate Passover next week, and they've launched a specific food drive for the holiday. Mary Pierce is the volunteer services coordinator for the local nonprofit Boulder Jewish Family Services.
We work with about 9 different retirement communities and or elders and people that are disabled in some way and that are in their home. So they're, you know, we work with people before all of this that have isolation issues and need you know, assistance with just having friendly visitors and things like that. So now it's just, you know, obviously many times worse. So when they locked down the retirement communities, whatever, almost 3 weeks ago now, you know, nobody could go in and visit. So whether they have family or not, like none of our volunteers could go visit and all that kind of stuff. So they're being taken care of because they are in a retirement community, at least those groups of people that we deal with. But they can, you know, they have a lot of limited access to groceries. They have a lot of them don't have iPads, don't have email. They're just not, you know, of that generation. We have teams of volunteers that are making phone calls just on a regular basis, touching base with people. And then we also have people that are kind of isolated in their home, where they're alone there too. So the same kind of thing, but they, you know, are getting grocery deliveries, which is actually becoming more difficult, and that type of thing. So we're just trying to support them through these times in those ways.
We'll talk about the food drive in just a moment, but that idea that people have been isolated, you know, from their families, essentially, if they are in these nursing home communities or retirement communities, because people may not be aware that it's been, I think, at least 2 weeks since Governor Polis actually made a directive that visitors were not allowed to go in and out of those spaces at all because of how vulnerable those communities, the elders, are. That's a very distressing time, I know, from family members who can't go in and interact face to face, but also from, you know, the folks themselves as well. I mean, can you share some of the stories of what people are experiencing because of that?
And to be honest with you, in Boulder, most of the communities, they created a lockdown situation well over before Governor Polis. So I would say at least a week before. So they've been, you know, kind of locked down and isolated for a lot longer than us even. So there's that. And most of the stories are just like, you know, they get afraid if they get sick, and they watch a lot of news. And so it's trying to get them distracted from watching too much news, and trying to get them, you know, in a position where they can maybe visit with their family on an iPad, or, you know, and just really just keeping in touch with them. So the stories were just of isolation and, you know, you have a tendency to watch too much TV, too much news, you know, a lot of them too, you know, first they got isolated to the outside world, then they're isolated inside their community too. Like they can't go to the regular dining services. They're delivering meals to their each individual places, you know? And so yeah, it's just kind of, you know, a lot more than you think. They're in their rooms and they can't come out. So they get afraid. You know, they're healthy. They're staying healthy, I think. They're physically okay, but the mental anguish is really difficult. So we're just kind of calling them more often and staying in touch and working with the different communities and saying, hey, we talked to so-and-so and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they'll, you know, send some people to go visit or whatever. But yeah, but the isolation is tough.
I know a big part of this as well is that religious services have also been cancelled. And so I know that's a huge component for many people in our society, but particularly seniors, for a lot of people, that is their community. I mean, give us a sense of the impact of that.
Yeah, it's a big impact. The Passover in particular, which is coming up next week, it starts Wednesday night, is an 8-day long Jewish holiday. And it is just, it's a big Jewish holiday. It's one of the holidays that people, no matter what level of religion they practice, you know, connect to Passover in some way if they're Jewish. So we do these Passover holidays in 9 different communities, and we get a huge response. Some of them have 50 to 70 people that come. And we have rabbis that donate their time that come and do like mini services. And we bring in all the foods for them to eat because there's very particular foods that you eat at Passover. And so it's one of our most sacred holidays, but it's also one of the most, you know, fun and uplifting and, you know, it's celebrating the freedom of slavery. And so it's also the one when it comes to reaching out to the elders in our community, we definitely get the most response, you know. Folks that don't identify necessarily as Jewish know about the story of Passover and they come and celebrate with us. So, when they shut down the services that we've been doing, we probably have been doing them, I don't know, 20 years in Boulder at many different retirement communities. When that all kind of, when we weren't able to go into the communities anymore, that's when we did, establish this idea of taking kind of Passover to them. And then that's kind of evolved into this Passover grocery drive that we're doing now as the laws and the restrictions have changed and gotten more stringent. We've kind of had to see how that was going to go and see how we could support the people that are isolated with a Passover service at some level at some point to make them, you know, connected to their Jewish community, connected to the holiday. And, you know, as like all of us do, and you can imagine even, you know, when you're locked into your own little room, like you kind of lose track of time, right? I mean, people are like, every day is Sunday, I'm always hearing, you know? And so it's just like, so we want them to remember what day the holiday is and that it is coming and that they will be able to celebrate and enjoy some of the foods of Passover.
Well, I know that Boulder Jewish Family Service and the Boulder JCC that you are looking now actively for donations for this Passover grocery bag delivery. Is it about 50 community members that you're hoping to be able to deliver bags to?
Yes. Yes. We started out with 50. We actually have a list of a little bit more. So we have somewhat of a wait list, but we're really just trying to 50 bags is our goal. So unfortunately, we did a big like a donation drive at the JCC, which the building has been closed, so they let us use their parking lot for it. And it was the morning of last Thursday that Jared Polis kind of locked down the state of Colorado, and we all got those messages on our phones with the alerts, and I think it made a lot of people nervous and kind of freaked them out. And that was the morning of my drive, so we didn't get the kind of response that we had hoped. I think people were like, nah, you know. As we all are kind of growing with this pandemic and trying to figure out what we're supposed to do and not do. So we didn't get the amount of people coming to the food donation drive as we thought. So now working with the JCC, they are closed, but they have a staff person that works there every day that's a security person, and he's taking in any donations that are dropped off for us. So so folks can go drop off a donation anytime at the JCC at the front door, and he takes it in from 9 to 5, Monday through Friday. So they can just leave it right there, and he's taking it in. And then next week, we're going to put it all together and deliver them.
There are specific food items I know that you're looking for obviously the Passover holiday. I mean, give us a sense of what you'd really like people to donate.
Okay, so there is a list if folks want to go take a look at it on the JCC website with more details and that type of thing. But we're trying to kind of deliver. So we have to deliver items that are sealed from the store, you know, like jars that are sealed. Like originally we were thought about doing like a prepared meal, but as our restraints have become more, we have to, you know, they have to be sealed. We have to, we will be wiping down every jar and every box with a Clorox wipe and that type of thing. So keeping that in mind, we'd love to donate, deliver a big bag of all the necessary items that come on a Seder plate. And that would be, of course, matzah, which is the unleavened bread that the Jewish people celebrate to eat during Passover. Gefilte fish, which you buy in a jar. Most people eat these coconut macaroons because they're kosher for Passover in a jar or a can. And they, of course, also are made with unleavened flour. Chicken soup in a can. Grape juice, which represents the wine. And the various different things that go on the Seder plate. So I think a couple other things, we have like horseradish on there, which is kind of the bitter herb that represents the bitter times that the Jews were in when they're enslaved. It also, of course, represents the bitter times that we are in today. And so all of those items are listed on the JCC website. But the most important things are definitely the matzah, and the items that go on the Seder plate.
And you can drop off food for the Passover food drive at the JCC. The last day to drop off packages, though, is April 6th, because grocery bags will be delivered on April 7th. And you can find out more at the website, jewishfamilyservice.org, jewishfamilyservice.org. Well, there is so much information coming at us every day when it comes to the current pandemic. And a lot of that information is figures, data, and not just about the current situation, but projections on figures for the coming weeks. But how do experts come up with those figures, that data modelling? KGN News' Rosanna Longo spoke with Lauren Cobb, a former associate research professor in the Department of Mathematical and Statistical Sciences at the University of Colorado, Denver. He's now retired. He's an applied mathematician who specialises in dynamic spatial models of general social processes, including epidemics and public health emergencies.
A lot of people don't know what goes into a model. The word model is just too flexible. But in the area of epidemiology, epidemics generally, we have two major types of models. One is called agent-based, which simply means that it focuses on the behavior of individuals. And it's like a computer simulation of individual behavior. So a population might be represented by 10,000 little so-called agents. Some of them are children, some of them are grown-ups, and they move around, they have a home, they have a school, or they have a place of business, or they go to the market, they interact with each other. And the epidemic is transmitted from person to person, and then you look at the overall number of people who are infected, recovered over time in the model. And that tells you, if the model is right, it tells you what the epidemic is likely to look like. The other major type is population-based. So there are no individuals. We divide up the landscape into little cells, maybe 1 mile by a mile or 10 miles by 10 miles. And there's a population inside that cell, which works according to mathematical principles. There's a class of epidemic models, divides a population into susceptible or infected or recovered. There can be up 10, 20 categories of disease states. At the ground level, the fundamental level of the model, what we're looking at is proportions. Proportion of the population that is infected, proportion that is susceptible, proportion that's immune, those sort of things. The most important thing is that each cell in the model has its own internal dynamics and then interacts with neighboring cells. So people might visit or in some way interact across cells, across space, and that allows the transmission of the epidemic disease, and we can actually see it on a map spreading across the countryside. It's very dramatic. You get these movements of infection from a source, typically in a city, but not always, and it infects the city, and then it moves out into the surrounding territories, and then it hits another city. If you've got transportation in the model, then we can see long-distance transmission carried by airplanes, for example, or ocean ships. And these are lovely to watch. I mean, really, if you pick your colors right, you know, you have bright red for the infection and blue for recovered, for example. Get these colored maps that are just vibrating and moving. And if under a lot of circumstances, when you're doing epidemic modeling, it scares you. It really scares you. It's such a visual representation of what's happening to the population. So those are what we mean by models.
With this new virus, like COVID-19, with limited data, how does it affect the accuracy of the models?
Data is typically collected by public health officials or government agencies for the purpose of making decisions. Epidemiologists need data for a different purpose. We need the same kind of data generally, but in order to figure out how the virus works. Is it airborne or waterborne or mosquito-borne, for example? Is it highly infectious or not very? Is there any immunity given by having the disease? And how long does it last? And how long does it take to become infectious? All of these things we know in the real world only through testing. So the data from the testing helps us set the critical factors in the model, and that determines its accuracy.
So what measures should the government have taken to avoid what's going on right now, from your point of view and your expertise in the field?
I think it's fair to say, from the point of view of every modeler from any discipline who has tried to create a model of the epidemic in order to look into the future, the government should have done enough testing and other kinds of measurements. I mean, just calling people, sampling them. How are you feeling today? Do you have a fever? This sort of information gathering is absolutely critical to know what is actually going on. It's a little bit, you can think of it, these things in part as like a political poll before an election. Every politician wants all the polling they can get. They need to know, what are the questions that are bothering the voters? What are they not concerned with? What political parties do they depend on? Or are they independent of any party? Are they even going to vote? Every politician understands the importance of that kind of data. And in epidemics, it's exactly the same. We need to know that stuff. And studies, however they are done, whether it's by telephone or going out into the field, whether it's medical testing or it's just a simple observation of a temperature, body temperature, these pieces of information are going to be put together to almost decode how the virus works, what its dynamics are, so that we can make accurate models and predict the future with some degree of confidence.
And we'll hear more on data modeling and statistics and his thoughts on what's happening right now with COVID-19 and how we're getting information with the retired professor, Lauren Cobb. That'll be coming up this afternoon at 3 on Metro. It is 8:27. You're listening to KGNU. And just a note to listeners, some critical emergency communications infrastructure work is being done on our transmission tower, and that's been causing some momentary outages of our FM signal. And we do hope that that has not been interfering with your listening experience. There's a possibility that we might have another outage. That's coming up later this morning after about 9 o'clock, and again later this afternoon. So we do ask listeners to tune in online at kgnu.org. It's 8:28 and it's time now for Radio Nibbles.
Try the salami, Tommy. Give it the gravy, Davy.
Everybody eats on Thursday mornings, particularly with John Landorf joining us live from his kitchen. A perfect location, John, to talk about food, as we are really focusing on food so much in the current pandemic. But there's lots to get through today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm just puttering around here in the Radio Nibbles test kitchen. We've got time to mess with things and ingredients.
Well, I think a lot of people are discovering ingredients that may have been hidden in the far-flung regions of their pantries. And people are really cooking with what they got these days, whether it's what they have at home or what they can access in the grocery store. So I know that you have lots of great tips on cooking with what you've got.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure everyone is bored with what they have been making. And so I started asking people, tell me what you have, and I'll tell you what you can make with it. And so somebody said, they had ground turkey and butternut squash and cabbage, for instance. And so I said, make ground turkey meatballs with herbs and egg and breadcrumbs and cheese and fry them in olive oil, and then make some grits or polenta, creamy, fairly easy to do. And then if you have some butternut squash, you can peel it, cut it in tiny cubes, and then simmer it in chicken broth until it's tender. If you add a little bit of cream or milk, onion, sage, and pepper, you can make essentially butternut squash risotto, which is lovely. You simmer it a while, it gets creamy. You can add some meat or fish to it. With the cabbage, there you are. You bought a big thing of cabbage because you thought, I should have cabbage. So you chop it up really roughly, take a baking pan, put in some sesame oil, or you can do it on the stove. Saute with sesame oil or olive oil. Add mustard and ginger and soy sauce, a little honey and sugar, until it really cooks down and it sweetens up. It's really a lovely thing, and you can make a meal out of that.
It's a good time to rediscover some of the spices that you might have lingering. One of the things that we're talking about this year is food waste and educating people on sometimes trusting your nose as opposed to some of the dates that are printed on some of the food items that we buy, because they tend to be quite arbitrary in terms of the expiration or the use-by dates.
Yeah.
But should we be cautious, certainly when it comes to spices, because I know a lot of people are getting creative to spice up some of the foods that they're cooking.
Well, what I would say is, spices don't go bad. They just lose the volatile oils that give it aroma and flavor. So it doesn't hurt to use old nutmeg. It just doesn't taste as good. I would say, you probably have enough toilet paper. So the next time you venture into a supermarket, go someplace that has bulk spices and get tiny amounts of 10 or 12 of your favorite spices and cook with fresh spices. It really will liven up your life.
Well, John, this time of year, we would typically be celebrating the imminent opening of the local farmers markets. But of course, with everything going on, that's not the case. But we do have some farmers market news. Oh.
Yeah, let's all let out a heavy sigh that we won't be there on Saturday morning. But on Saturday morning, what the Boulder County Farmers Market is doing, since it's an essential business, this Saturday, they are giving out bags of produce at the Boulder County Fairgrounds for people that receive WIC, SNAP, and other benefits. Coming up, starting the week of April 19th, the market is going to have curbside pickup at the Boulder County Fairgrounds on Saturdays. And then the other markets in Boulder, et cetera, will open after that. There is a website. If you go to bcfm.com, there's a wonderful list of farmers that right now have vegetables and fruits and things available, meat, other products, at their farm stands. And you can go today or this weekend and help them out, get yourself some fresh produce, sign up for a CSA, and help keep our local food economy alive.
But people can find out more at bcfm.org. Well, John, what's the best thing you've tasted this week?
I had a really excess of different kinds of citrus, from tangerines to oranges to lemons. So I sat there, you know, watching the news, zesting all of them. And then I made marmalade. I had some leftover citrus-infused syrup. So I took a bunch of mixed nuts, which, frankly, were left over from Christmas. You know, I cracked them and, you know. I roasted those, coated them in the citrus syrup, and then I roasted them until they were crunchy, and good golly gosh, it's tasty, and it's really good.
Well, people can read more of John's recent writing at his home site. That's johnlendorf.wordpress.com. And we look forward to catching more of your recipe ideas from the Pandemic Pantry in the coming weeks, John.
And please email me at radionibbles@kgnu.org if you have any questions or if I can help you with your cooking.
Bon appetit.
Bon appetit.
Look in the Fendel Mendel. Everybody eats when they come to my house.